Chapter 6. At first, the waiting was sheer hell. They took him to the air lot on top of the empty tower after they discovered that the Arnjades were not to be found, and they forced him to sit in a corner of the windswept roof. The panic was rising in him by then, and his stomach was a painful knot. "Bretan," he began in a voice laced by hysteria, but the Kavalar only turned on him and delivered a stinging, open-handed blow across the mouth.
"I am not Bretan to you," he said. "Call me Bretan Braith if you must address me, Mockman."
After that, Dirk was silent. The broken wheel of fire limped oh so slowly across the sky of Warlorn, and as he watched it crawl, it seemed to Dirk that he was very close to a breaking point. Everything that had happened to him seemed unreal, and the Braves and the events of the afternoon were the least real of all, and he wondered what would happen if he were to suddenly leap to his feet and vault over the edge of the roof into the street. He would fall and fall, he thought, as one does in a dream. But when he smashed on the dark glowstone blocks below, there would be no pain, only the shock of a sudden awakening. And he would find himself in his bed on Brack, drenched with sweat and laughing at the absurdities of his nightmare. He played with that thought and others like it for a time that seemed like hours. But when he looked up at last, Fat Satan had hardly sunk at all. He began to tremble then. The cold, he told himself. The cold, Warlorn wind. But he knew that it was not the cold, and the more he fought to control it, the more he shook, until the Kavalars looked at him strangely, and still the waiting went on. And finally the shakes ran their course, as had the thoughts of suicide and the panic before them, and an odd sort of calm swept over him. He found himself thinking again, but thinking of nonsensical things, speculating idly, as if he was soon going to place a wager on whether the Grey Manto or the military flyer would return first, on how Jan or Garst would fare in a duel with one-eyed Bretan, on what had happened to the Jelly Children in the distant Blackwiner city. Such matters seemed terribly important, though Dirk didn't know why. Then he began to watch his captors. That was the most interesting game of all, and it served to pass the time as well as any other. As he watched, he noticed things. The two Kavalars had hardly spoken since they escorted him to the rooftop. Chell, the tall one, sat on the low wall that surrounded the air lot only a meter away from Dirk, and when Dirk began to study him, he saw that he was quite an old man indeed. The resemblance to Lorimar Highbraith was very deceptive. Although Chell walked and dressed like a younger man, he was at least 20 years senior to Lorimar, Dirk guessed. Seated, his years weighed on him heavily. A distinct paunch bulged over the soft, shining metal of his mesh steel belt, and his wrinkles were carved very deep in his worn brown face. And Dirk saw blue veins and splotches of greyish-pink skin on the back of Chell's hands as they rested on his knees. The long, useless wait for the Iron Jade's return had touched him too, and it was more than boredom. His cheeks seemed to sag, and his wide shoulders had unconsciously fallen into a tired slouch. He moved once, sighing, and his hands came off his knees and twined together, and he stretched. That was when Dirk saw the armlets. The right arm was iron and glowstone, twin to the one displayed so proudly by one-eyed Bretan, and the left was silver. But the jade was missing. It had been there once, but the stones had been torn from their settings, and now the silver bracelet was riddled by holes. While weary old Chell, it seemed suddenly hard for Dirk to see him as the menacing martial figure he had been just a short time ago, sat and waited for something to happen, Bretan, or Bretan Braith as he demanded to be called, paced the hours away. He was all restless energy, worse than anyone Dirk had ever known, even Jenny, who had been quite a pacer in her time. He kept his hands deep in the slit pockets of his short white jacket, and walked back and forth across the rooftop, back and forth, back and forth. Every third trip or so he would glance up impatiently, as if he were reproaching the twilight sky because it had not yielded up Jan Vickery to him. They were a strange pair, Dirk decided as he watched them. Bretan Braith was as young as Chell was old, surely no older than Garst Janicek and probably younger than Gwen and Jan or himself. How had he come to be attained to a Cavalar so many years his senior? He was no high, either. He had given no Bethane to Braith. His left arm, covered by fine reddish hairs, that glinted now and then when he walked very close and let them catch the sunlight, had no bracelet of jade and silver. His face, his strange half-face, was ugly beyond anything that Dirk had ever seen. But as the day waned and false dusk became real, he found himself getting used to it. When Breton Braith paced in one direction, he looked utterly normal. A whip lean youth, full of nervous energy, held tightly in check, so tightly that Breton almost seemed to crackle. His face on that side was unlined and serene, short black curls pressed tightly around his ear, and a few ringlets dropped to his shoulder, but he had no hint of a beard. Even his eyebrow was only a faint line above a wide green eye. He appeared almost innocent. Then, pacing, he would reach the edge of the roof and turn back the way he had come, and everything would be changed. The left side of his face was inhuman, a landscape of twisted planes and angles that no face ought to have. The flesh was seamed in a half-dozen places, and elsewhere it was shiny slick as enamel. On this side, Breton had no hair whatsoever, and no ear, only a hole, and the left half of his nose was a small piece of flesh-colored plastic. His mouth was a lipless slash, and worst of all, it moved. He had a twitch, a grotesque tick. It touched the left corner of his mouth at intervals and rippled up his bare scalp over the hills of scar tissue. In the daylight, the Braith's glowstone eye was as dark as a piece of obsidian. But slowly night was coming. The hell eye sank, and the fires were stirring in his socket. At full darkness, Breton would be the Hell-Eye, not Warlorn's tired supergiant of a sun. The glowstone would burn a steady, unwinking red, and the half-face around it would become a black travesty of a skull, a fit home for an eye such as that. It all seemed very terrifying until you remembered, as Dirk remembered, that it was all quite deliberate. Breton Braith had not been forced to have a glowstone for an eye. He had chosen it for his own reasons, and those reasons were not hard to comprehend. Dirk's mind raced back to the earlier part of the afternoon and the conversation by the Wolf's Head aircar. Breton was quick and shrewd, no doubt about that, but Chell might easily be in the early years of senility. He had been painfully slow to grasp anything, and his young Tane had led him by the hand at every point, Dirk recalled. Suddenly the two Braiths seemed much less fearful, and Dirk could only wonder why he had ever been so terrified of them. They were almost amusing. Whatever Jan Vickery might say when he returned from the city in the starless pool, surely nothing could happen. There was no real danger from such as these. As if to underline the point, Chell began to mumble, talking to himself without realizing it, and Dirk glanced over and tried to hear. The old man jiggled a little as he spoke, his eyes vacantly staring. His words made no sense at all. It took Dirk several minutes to think things through, but he did, and it finally dawned on him that Chell was speaking in Old Cavalar, a tongue that evolved on High Cavalan during the long centuries of interregnum, when the surviving Cavalars had no contact with other human worlds. It was a language that was quickly melting back into standard Terran, though enriching the mother language with words that had no equivalents. Hardly anyone spoke Old Cavalar anymore. Garth Janicek had told him, and yet here was Chell, an elderly man from the most traditional of the Holdfast coalitions, mumbling things he had no doubt heard in his youth. And so too Breton, who slapped Dirk soundly because he used the wrong form of address, a form permitted only to Kefi, another dying custom, Garth had said. Even the high bonds were growing lax. But not Breton Braith, young and not high at all, who clung to traditions that men generations older than himself had already discarded as dysfunctional. Dirk almost felt sorry for them. They were misfits, he decided, more outcast and more alone than Dirk himself. Worldless, in a sense, because High Cavalan had moved beyond them and could be their world no longer. No wonder they came to Warlorn. They belonged here. They and all their ways were dying. Breton in particular was a figure of pity. Breton, who tried so hard to be a figure of fear. He was young, perhaps the last true believer, and he might live to see a time when no one felt as he did. Was that why he was tamed to Chell? Because his peers rejected him and his old man's values? Probably, Dirk decided, and that was grim and sad. One yellow sun still glinted in the west. The hub was a vague red memory on the horizon, and Dirk was thoughtful and in control, beyond all fear, when they heard the air cars approach. Bretan Braith froze and looked up, and his hands came out of his pockets. One of them came to rest almost automatically on the holster of his laser pistol. Chell, blinking, got slowly to his feet and suddenly seemed to shed a decade. Dirk rose as well. The cars came in, two of them together, the grey car and the olive-green one, flying with an almost military precision side by side.
"Come here," Bretan rasped,
and Dirk walked over to him. And Chell joined them, so the three were standing together, with Dirk in the center like a prisoner. The wind bit at him. All around, the glowstones of the city Lartane were radiant and bloody, and Breton's eye, so close, shone savagely in its scarred nesting place. The twitching had stopped for some reason. His face was very still. Jan Vickery hovered the grey manta and let it float gently down, then vaulted over the side and came to them with quick strides. The square and ugly military machine, roofed over and armored so the pilot was not visible, landed almost simultaneously. A thick metal door swung open on its side, and Gas Janicek emerged, ducking his head a trifle and looking around to see what was the problem. He saw, straightened, and slammed the door with a resounding clang, then came over to stand at Vickery's right arm. Vickery greeted Dirk first with a curt nod and a vague smile. Then he looked at Chell. "A Chell Nim Coldwyn Frey Braith Davison," he said formally. "Honor to your holdfast, honor to your Tain."
"And to yours," the old Braith said. "My new Tain guards my side, and you know him not."
He indicated Bretan. Jan turned, weighed the scarred youth quickly with his eyes. "I am Jan Vickery," he said, "of the Iron Jade Gathering." Bretan made his noise, his peculiar noise. There was an awkward silence.
"More properly," Janicek said, "my Tain is Jantini Riv Wolfhigh Ironjade Vickery, and I am Gas Ironjade Janicek."
Now Bretan responded,
"Honor to your holdfast, honor to your Tain. I am Breton Braith Lantry. I would never have known," Janicek said with the barest trace of a smile. "We have heard of you."
Jan Vickery threw him a warning glance. There seemed to be something wrong with Jan's face. At first, Dirk thought it was a trick of the light. Darkness was coming fast now. But then he saw that Vickery's jaw was slightly swollen on one side, giving his profile a puffed look.
"We come to you in high grievance," said Bretan Braith Lantry.
Vickery looked to Chell.
"This is so. It is so, Jantini High Iron Jade."
"I'm sorry we must quarrel," Vickery replied. "What is the problem?"
"We must question you," Bretan said.
He put his hand on Dirk's shoulder.
"This one, Jantini High Iron Jade, tell us, is he Carariel of Iron Jade or no?"
Now Gas Janicek grinned openly and his hard blue eyes met Dirk's, laughing just a little in their icy depths as if to say, "Well, well, what have you done now?" Jan Vickery only frowned.
"Why? Does your truth depend on our reasons, High Bond?"
Bretan asked, harshly. His scarred cheek twitched violently. Vickery looked at Dirk. Clearly he was not pleased.
"You have no cause to delay or deny us your answer, Jantini High Iron Jade,"
Chell Davison said.
"The truth is yes, or the truth is no. There cannot be more to it than that."
The old man's voice was quite even. He at least had no nervousness to conceal, and his code dictated each word that he would say.
"Once you were correct, Chell Frey Braith," Vickery began. "In the old days of the Holdfast, truth was a simple matter, but these are new times and full of new things. We are a people of many worlds now, not simply of one, and so our truths are more complex."
"No," said Chell. "This Mogman is Carariel, or this Mogman is not Carariel. That is not complex."
My Tain Chell speaks the truth, Breton added. The question I have put to you is quite simple. Ibond, I demand your answer.
Vickery would not be pushed. Dirk Talarian is a man from the distant world of Avalon, far within the Tempter's Veil, a human world where I once studied. I did name him Carariel, to give him my protection and the protection of Ironjade against those who would do him harm. But I protect him as a friend, as I would protect a brother in Ironjade, as a Tain protects a Tain. He is not my property. I make no claim to own him. Do you understand? Chell did not. The old man pressed his lips together beneath his little stiff moustache and mumbled something in old Kavalar. Then he spoke aloud, too loud, in fact, almost shouting,
What is this nonsense? Your Tain is Gaz Ironjade, not this strange one. How can you shield him as a Tain? Is he of Ironjade? He is not even armed. Is he a man at all? Why, if he is, he cannot be Carariel. If he is not, and he is Carariel, then you must own him. I do not hear any sense in your mock-man words.
I am sorry of that, Chell Freebraith, Vickery said. But it is your ears that fail, and not my words. I tried to do you honor, but you do not make it easy.
You jape me, Chell said accusingly. No, you do.
Breton Braith spoke then, and his voice had none of Chell's anger, but it was very hard.
Dirk Talarian, as he calls himself, and you call him, has done us wrong. This is the heart of the matter, Jantany High Ironjade. He has laid hands upon the property of Braith without any word of Braith's permission. Now, who pays for this? If he is a mockman and Carariel to you, then here and now I issue challenge. Ironjade has done wrong to Braith. If he is not Carariel, then, well...
He stopped. I see, Jan Vickery said. Dirk?
For one thing, all I did was sit in the damned aircar for a second, Dirk said uneasily. I was looking for a derelict, an abandoned car still in working order. Gwen and I found one like that in Crine Lamia. I thought maybe I could find another.
Vickery shrugged and looked at the two Brays.
It seems that small wrong has been done, if any. Nothing was taken.
Our car was touched, old Chell bellowed. By him, by a mockman. He had no right. Small wrong, you call this. He might have flown it off. Would you have me close my eyes like a mockman and be thankful he did so little?
He turned to Breton, his Tain.
The Ironjade's japers insult us, he said. Perhaps they are not true men, but mockmen themselves. They are full of mockman words.
Gas Janasek responded immediately.
I am Tain to Jantany Riv Wolf High Ironjade, and I vouch for him. He is no mockman.
The words came quickly, a rote formula. From the way the Janasek then looked toward Vickery, it seemed clear to Dirk that he expected his Tain to repeat the same words. Instead, Jan shook his head and said,
Ah, Chell, there are no mockmen.
He sounded immensely tired, and there was a slump to his broad shoulders. The tall, elderly Braith looked as though Jan had struck him. Again he muttered low, hoarse words in old Kavalar.
This cannot go on, Breton Braith said. We get nowhere. Did you name this man Carariel, Jantany High Ironjade?
I did.
I rejected the name, Dirk said quietly.
He felt compelled to, and the time seemed right. Breton half turned and glared at him, and the Braith's green eyes seemed to have as much fire in it as its glowstone counterpart. He rejected only the suggestion of property, Vickery said very quickly. My friend asserted his humanity, but he still wears the shield of my protection. Gas Janasek grinned and shook his head.
No, Jan, you are not home this morning. Talarian wants none of our protection either. He said so.
Vickery looked at him furious.
Gas, this is no time for jokes. I do not joke, said Janasek.
It's true, Dirk admitted. I said I could take care of myself.
Dirk, you do not know what you're saying, Vickery said.
For a change, I think I do.
Breton Braith Lantry made his noise, quite loudly and suddenly, while Dirk and the two Ironjades argued, and his Tain Chell stood stiff with fury.
Silence!
The sandpaper voice demanded, and it got it.
This is of no consequence. Things are the same. You say he is human, Iron Jade. If so, he cannot be Corariel, and you cannot protect him. If he wants it or no, you cannot protect him. My Kethi will see that you do not.
He spun on his heel to face Dirk full front.
I challenge you, Dirk Talarian.
Everyone was quiet. Lartain smoldered all around, and the wind was very cold. I meant no insult, Dirk said, remembering words the Iron Jades had used at other times. Am I allowed to apologize, or what? He offered his palms to Breton Braith, up and open and empty. The scarred face twitched.
Insult was taken.
You must duel him, Janasek said.
Dirk's palms sank slowly. At his side they became fists. He said nothing. Jan Vickery was staring at the ground mournfully, but Janasek was still animated.
Dirk Talarian knows nothing of the dueling customs, he told the two Braiths. Such customs do not prevail on Avalon. Will you allow me to instruct him?
Breton Braith nodded, the same curiously awkward motion of their head and shoulders that Dirk had noticed that afternoon in the garage. Chell did not even seem to hear. The old Braith was still facing Vickery, mumbling and glaring.
There are four choices to make, Talarian, Janasek said to Dirk. As challenged, you make the first. I urge you to make the choice of weapons and to choose blades.
Blades? Dirk said softly.
I make the choice of mode, Breton rasped, and I choose the death square.
Janasek nodded. You have the third choice also, Talarian. Since you have no Tain, the choice of numbers is dictated. It must be singles. You may say that, or you may choose the place.
Old Earth? Dirk said hopefully.
Janasek grinned. No. This world only, I fear. Other choices are not legal.
Dirk shrugged.
Here, then. I make the choice of numbers, Breton said.
It was fully dark now, with only the thin scattering of outworld stars to light the black sky above. The Braith's eye flamed, and strange reflected light glistened wetly on his scars.
I choose singles, as it must be.
It is set, then, Janasek said. You two must agree on an arbiter, and then...
Jan Vickery looked up. His features were dim and shadowy, with only the pale light of the glowstones to shine on them, but his swollen jaw cast an odd silhouette.
Chell, he said very quietly, in a deliberate and even tone.
Yes,
the old Braith replied.
You are a fool to believe in mockmen, Vickery told him. All of you who believe such are fools.
Dirk was still facing Breton Braith when Vickery spoke. The scarred face twitched once, twice, a third time.
Chell sounded as if he was in a trance. Insult is taken, Jantany, High Iron Jade. False Cavalier, Mockman, I issue challenge.
Breton whirled and tried to shout. His voice was not capable of it, and he sputtered and choked instead.
You jewel-breaker, Iron Jade, I...
It is within the code, Vickery replied half-heartedly, though perhaps if Breton Braith could overlook the small trespass of an ignorant off-worlder, then I might find it in myself to beg forgiveness from Chell Free Braith.
No,
Janasek said darkly,
begging has no honor.
No,
Breton echoed. His face was a skull now. His jewel eye gleamed and his cheek was twisted in fury.
I have bent as far as I may bend for you, false Gavilar. I will not make jape of all the wisdom of my holdfast. My Tain was more right than I. In truth, I was bitter wrong to even try to avoid duel with you, liar, mockman. There was great shame in it, but now I will be clean. We will kill you, Chell, and I. We will kill all three of you.
Perhaps that is truth, Vickery said. It will soon be done, and then we will see.
And your Bethane bitch, too, Breton said.
He could not shout. His voice broke when he tried. So he spoke as low as ever, and the rawness caught in his throat and could not be held.
When we have done with you, we will wake our hounds and hunt her and her fat Kimdisi through the forest they know so well.
Jan Vickery ignored him.
I am challenged, he said to Chell Freebraith. The first of the four choices is mine. I make the choice of numbers. We will fight tamed.
I make the choice of weapons, Chell replied. I choose sidearms.
I make the choice of mode, said Vickery. I choose the death square.
Last, the choice of place, Chell said. Here, then.
The Arbiter will chalk only one square, Janasek said. Of the five men on the roof, only he was still smiling. We need an Arbiter still. The same for both jewels?
One man will do, Chell said. I suggest Lorimar Highbraith.
No, said Janasek. He came to us in high grievance only yesterday. A Kirak Redsteel Kavis.
No, Breton said. He writes fair poetry, but I have no other use for Kirak Redsteel.
There are two of the Shanigate holding, Janasek said. I am not certain of their names.
We would prefer Abraith, Breton said, twitching. Abraith will rule well, uphold all the honor of the code.
Janasek glanced at Vickery. Vickery shrugged.
Agreed, Janasek said, facing Breton once more. Abraith, then. Pyre Braith Orion.
Not Pyre Braith, Breton said.
You are not easy to please, Janasek said dryly. He is one of your Kethi.
I have had frictions with Pyre Braith, Breton said.
A high bond would make a better choice, old Chell said. A man of stature and wisdom. Rosef Lant Banshee High Braith Kelsek. Janasek shrugged.
Agreed. I will ask him, said Chell.
The others nodded.
Tomorrow, then, said Janasek.
All is done, Chell said. And while Dirk stood and watched, feeling lost and out of place, the four Cavalars took their farewell. And strangely, before parting, each of them kissed his two enemies lightly on the lips. And Breton Braith Lantry, scarred and one-eyed, his lip half gone, Breton Braith Lantry kissed Dirk. When the Braiths had gone, the others went downstairs. Vickery opened the door to his apartment and turned on the lights. Then, in methodical silence, he began to build a fire in the great hearth beneath the mantel, taking logs of twisted black wood from a concealed storage cabinet in a nearby wall. Dirk sat on one end of the couch, frowning. Garth Janasek sat on the other end with a vague smile on his face, his fingers tugging absently at the orange-red hairs of his beard. No one spoke. The fire woke to blazing life, orange and blue-tipped tongues of flames licking around the logs, and Dirk felt the sudden heat in his face and hands. A scent like cinnamon filled the room. Vickery stood up and left. He came back with three glasses, brandy snifters as black as obsidian. A bottle was under his arm. He handed one glass to Dirk and one to Garth, put the third down on a nearby table and yanked the cork with his teeth. The wine within was a deep red in color, very pungent. Vickery poured all three glasses very full, and Dirk passed his under his nose. The vapors burned, but he found them oddly pleasant. Now, Vickery said before any of them had tasted the wine. He had set down the bottle and lifted his own glass.
Now I'm going to ask something very difficult of both of you. I'm going to ask each of you to go beyond his own little culture for a time and be something he has not been before, something strange to him. Gas, I ask you, for the good of each of us, to be friend to Dirk Telerion. There is no word for it in Old Cavalar, I know. There is no need of such on High Cavalan, where a man has his holdfast and his kethi and most of all his tane. But we are all on Warlorn, and tomorrow we duel. Perhaps we do not duel altogether, yet we have common enemies. So I ask you, as my tane, to take the name and name bonds of friend with Telerion.
You ask a good deal of me, Janasek replied, holding his wine in front of his face and watching the flames dance in the black glass.
Telerion has spied on us, has attempted to steal my crow Bethame and your name, and now has involved us in this quarrel with Breton Braith. I am tempted to issue challenge against him myself for all he has done, and you, my Tane, you ask me to take the bond of friend instead.
I do, Vickery said. Janasek looked at Dirk, then tasted his wine.
You are my Tane,
he said. I yield to your wishes. What obligations must I fulfill in the name bond of friend?
Treat a friend as you would a kith, Vickery said. He turned slightly to face Dirk. And you, Telerian, you have been the cause of very great trouble, but I'm not sure how much of it, if any, you must truly bear the weight for. I ask something of you also. To be Holdfast brother for a time to Gas Anjay Janasek.
Dirk never got the chance to respond. Janasek beat him to it. You cannot do that. Who is he, this Telerian? How can you think him worthy? Bring him into Ironjade. He will be false, Jan. He will not keep the bonds. Will not defend the Holdfast. Will not return with us to the gathering. I protest this.
If he accepts, I think he will keep the bonds for a time, Vickery said.
For a time? Kethi are linked forever.
Then this will be a new thing, a new sort of Keth, a friend for a time.
It is more than you, said Janasek. I will not allow it.
Gas, said Jan Vickery. Dirk Telerian is now your friend, or have you forgotten so soon? You do wrong to try to block my offer. You break the bonds that you have just taken. You would not act such to a Keth.
You would not be inviting a Keth to be a Keth, Janasek grumbled. He would be already, so the whole thing has no sense to it. He is an out-bonder. The High Bond Council will rebuke you, Jan. This is wrong, clearly.
The High Bond Council is seated on High Cavalan, and this is Warlorn, Vickery said. Only you are here to speak for Ironjade. Will you hurt your friend?
Janasek did not reply.
Vickery turned again to Dirk. Well, Telerian?
I don't know, Dirk said. I think I know what it would mean to be a Holdfast brother, and I suppose that I appreciate the honor or whatever. But we have a lot of things between us, Jan.
You were speaking of Gwen, Vickery said. She is indeed between us, but Dirk, I am asking you to be a new and special sort of Holdfast brother, only for so long as you are on Warlorn, and only to Gas, not to myself or any other Ironjade. Do you understand?
Yes, that makes it easier. He glanced at Janasek. Even with Gas, though, I've got problems. He was the one who tried to make property out of me, and just now he wasn't exactly trying to get me out of that jewel.
I spoke only truth, Janasek said, but Vickery waved him quiet.
Those things I could forgive, I guess, Dirk said, but not the business with Gwen.
That matter will be resolved by myself and you and Gwen Dolvano, Vickery said calmly. Gas has no voice in it, though he may tell you that he has.
She is my Crowbethane, Gas complained. I have a right to speak and act. I have an obligation.
I'm talking about last night, Dirk said. I was at the door. I heard. Janasek hit her. And since then the two of you have had her locked up away from me.
Vickery smiled.
He hit her?
Dirk nodded.
I heard it.
You heard an argument and a blow, of that I have no doubt, Vickery said. He touched his swollen jaw. How do you think this transpired?
Dirk stared, and suddenly felt incredibly dense.
I don't know.
The Jelly Children.
Gas hit me, not Gwen, Vickery said.
I would do it again,
Janasek added in a surly voice.
But, said Dirk, but then what was going on last night, this morning?
Janasek rose and walked to Dirk's end of the couch to loom over him.
Friend Dirk, he said in slightly venomous tones, this morning I told you the truth. Gwen went out with Arkin Ruach to work. The Kimdisi had been calling for her all throughout yesterday. He was most frantic. The tale he told me was that a column of armor bugs had begun to migrate, undoubtedly in response to the growing cold. This is said to be very rare even on Eshelin. On Warlorn, of course, such an event is unique and cannot be recreated, and Ruach felt that it had to be studied at once. Now do you comprehend, my friend Dirk Telerian, now?
Dirk said. She would have said something.
Janasek returned to his seat with his gaunt hatchet face screwed up in a scowl.
My friend calls me a liar, he said.
Gar speaks the truth, Vickery said. Gwen said she would leave word for you, a note or a tape. Perhaps in the excitement of a preparation she forgot. Such things happen. She is very involved in her work, Dirk. She is a good ecologist.
Dirk looked at Gas Janicek.
Hold on, he said. This morning you said you were keeping her from me. You admitted it.
Vickery looked puzzled also.
Gas?
Truth, Janicek said grudgingly. He came up and pressed and pressed and forced his way inside with a transparent lie. More, he clearly wanted to believe that Gwen was being held captive by the foul Iron Jades. I doubt that he would have believed anything else.
He sipped carefully at his wine. That, Jan Vickery said, was not wise, Gas.
Untruth given, untruth returned, Janicek said, looking smug.
You are not being a good friend. I will henceforth be better, said Janicek.
That pleases me, Vickery said. Now, Talarian, will you be Keth to Gas?
Dirk considered it for a long moment.
I guess, he finally said.
Drink then, Vickery said.
The three men raised their glasses simultaneously. Janicek's was already half drained, and the wine flowed hot and a little bitter over Dirk's tongue. It was not the best wine he had ever tasted, but it was good enough.
Janicek finished his glass and stood.
We must talk of the duels.
Yes, Vickery said.
This has been a bitter day. Neither of you has been wise.
Janicek leaned up against the mantel below one of the leering gargoyles.
The greatest lack of wisdom was yours, Jan. Understand me, I have no fear of duel with Bretan Braith and Chell empty arms. But it was not needed. You deliberately provoked it. The Braith had to issue challenge after your words, lest even his own Tain spit upon him.
It did not go as I had hoped, Vickery said. I thought perhaps Bretan feared us, that he might let pass his duel with Talarian in order to avoid us.
He did not. No, said Janicek, he did not. I could have told you. Had you asked, you pushed him too far and came perilously close to duel-breaking.
It is within the code,
perhaps. Yet Bretan was correct. There would have been great shame for him if he had ignored Talarian's trespass in fear of you.
No, said Vickery. That is where you and all our people are wrong. There should be no shame in avoiding a duel. If we are ever to achieve our destiny, we must learn that.
Yet in a sense, you are right. In consideration of who and what he was, he could give no other answer.
I misjudged him.
A serious misjudgment, Janicek said.
A grin split his red beard. It would have been better to let Talarian duel.
I saw to it that they will fight with blades, did I not? The Braith would not have slain him for such a trifling offence. A man like Dirk, there would have been no honour in it. One blow only, I would have said. A cut would do Talarian good. A lesson for him, a lesson about mistakes.
It would add character to his face, a small cut. He looked at Dirk.
Now, of course, Bretan Braith will kill you.
He was still grinning, and he made his final comment with a casual elan. Dirk tried not to choke on his wine.
What?
Janicek shrugged.
As first challenged, you must duel first, so you cannot hope that Jan and I will slay them before they get to you. Bretan Braith Lantry is as widely known for his skill in duel as he is for his striking good looks. In truth, he is notorious. I suppose he is here hunting mockmen with Chell, but he is not really much of a hunter. He is more comfortable in the Death Square than in the wild, from all I have heard of him. Even his own Kethi find him difficult. In addition to being ugly, he took Chell free Braith to Tain. Chell was once a highbond of great power and honour. He outlived his Bethane and his original Tain. Today he is a superstitious dodderer with a small mind and great wealth. The holdfast rumours say the wealth is the reason Bretan Braith wears Chell's iron and fire. No one tells this to Bretan openly, of course. He is said to be quite touchy. And now Jan has made him angry as well, and perhaps he is a bit frightened. He will have no mercy for you. I hope that you can manage to cut him a bit before you die. That would make it easier for us and the jewel to follow.
Dirk was remembering the confidence that had filled him up on the roof. He had been quite certain that neither of the Braiths was a real danger. He understood them. He felt sorry for them. Now he began to feel sorry for himself.
Is he right? He asked Vickery.
Gas jokes and exaggerates, Vickery said. Yet you are in danger.
No doubt Bretan will try to kill you if you let him. This need not happen.
The rules of your mode and weaponry are quite simple. The Arbiter will chalk a square upon the street, 5 meters by 5, and you and your enemy will start from opposite corners. At a word from the Arbiter, each of you will advance with your sword toward the center. When you meet, you fight. To satisfy the requirements of honor, you must take one blow and deal one. I would advise you to cut at his foot or at his leg, since this will indicate that you have no wish for a true death duel. Then, after you have taken his first blow, try to deflect it with your sword if you can. You can walk to the perimeter of the square. Do not run. There is no honor in running, and the Arbiter will rule the duel a death victory for Bretan, and then the brace will kill you. You must walk calmly. At the perimeter line, once beyond it, you are safe. To achieve this safety, you must reach the perimeter line, Janasek said. Bretan will kill you first. If I deal my one blow and take one, then can I drop my sword and walk away? Dirk asked. In such a case, Bretan will kill you with a puzzled look on his face, or what remains of it, said Janasek. I would not do that, Vickery cautioned. Jan's suggestions are folly, Janasek said. He walked slowly back to the couch, retrieved his glass, and poured himself more wine. You should keep your sword and fight him. Consider the man is blind on one side. Surely he is vulnerable there. And see how awkwardly he nods or turns his head. Dirk's glass was empty. He held it out, and Janasek filled it with wine. How will you duel them? Dirk asked. The rules for our mode and weaponry differ from yours, Vickery said. The four of us must stand at the four corners of the Death Square with dueling lasers or other sidearms. We may not move except to step backwards outside the square to safety. And that we may not do until each man within the square has taken one shot. That done, the choice is ours. Those who remain within, if they still stand, may continue to fire. It can be a harmless mode or a very deadly one, depending on the will of those participating. Tomorrow, Janasek promised, it must be deadly. He drank again. I would wish otherwise, Vickery said with a rueful shake of his head. But I fear you speak the truth. The Braiths are too full of anger for us to fire into the air. Indeed, Janasek said with a small smile, they took the insult too deeply. Chell, empty arms at least, will not forgive. Can't you shoot to wound? Dirk suggested. Disarm them. The words came easily, but it was odd to hear himself say it. The situation was so totally outside his experience, and yet he found himself accepting it, becoming strangely comfortable with the two cavalars and their wine and their quiet talk of death and maiming. Perhaps it meant something to be one of the Kethi. Perhaps that was why his unease was fading. All Dirk knew was that he felt peaceful and at home. Vickery looked troubled. Wound them. I might wish that too, but it cannot be. The hunters fear us now. They spare Corariel of Ironjade because of that fear. We save lives. That will not be possible if we are too easy on the Braiths tomorrow. The others might not hold back their hunting if they thought that all they risked was a small wound. No, sadly, I think we must kill Chell and Bretan if we can. We can, Janasek said confidently. And, friend, Telerion, it is not so easy or so wise to wound an enemy in duel as you might think it is. Disarming them, well, you jape us. That is virtually impossible. We fight with dueling lasers, friend, not with war weapons. Such sidearms fire in half-second pulses and require a full 15 seconds to recycle between firings. You understand? A man who hurries his shot or makes it needlessly difficult, a man who shoots to disarm, he is soon dead. Even at 5 meters you can still miss, and your enemy will kill you clean before your laser is ready for a second shot. It can't be done, Dirk said. Many people are only wounded in duel, Vickery told him. Far more than are killed, in truth. Yet in most cases this is not the intended result. Sometimes, yes. When a man fires into the air and his enemy decides to punish him, then horrible scars can be inflicted. But this does not happen often. We might wound Chell, Janasek said. He is old and slow. His sidearm will not rise quickly to his hand. But Bretan Braith is another matter. He is said to have a half dozen kills already.
He will be my concern, said Vickery. See that Chell's laser stays dark, Garrus, and that will be enough.
Perhaps, Janasek looked towards Dirk. If you could cut Breton only a little, Telerian, in the arm or hand or shoulder, give him a single painful gash, slow him a bit. That would make a difference.
He grinned. Despite himself, Dirk found he was returning the smile. I can try, he said. But remember, I know damn little about dueling and less about swords, and my first concern is going to be staying alive.
Don't fret over the impossible, Janasek said, still grinning. Just do as great a damage as you can.
The door opened. Dirk turned and looked up, and Janasek fell silent. Gwen Delvano stood framed in the doorway, her face and clothing streaked with dust. She looked uncertainly from one face to the next, then came slowly into the room. A sensor pack was slung over one shoulder. Arkan Ruach followed her in, carrying two heavy cases of instruments under his arms. He was sweaty and panting, dressed in heavy green pants and jacket and hood, and he looked much less foppish than usual. Gwen lowered the sensor pack to the ground gently, but her hand kept its hold on the strap.
Damage, she said. What was this? Who was going to do damage to who?
Gwen, Dirk began. No, Janasek interrupted. He stood very stiffly. The Kimdisi must leave. Ruach looked around, white-faced and puzzled. He threw back his hood and began to mop his forehead beneath his white blonde hair.
Utter trash, Garsi, he said. What is this, big Kavalar secret, eh? A war, a hunt, a duel, some violence, yes? I will not pry such things, no, not me. I give you privacy then, yes, yours to keep.
He started back toward the door. Ruach, Jan Vickery said, wait. The Kimdisi paused. Vickery faced his Tain. He must be told. If we fail, we will not fail. If we fail, they have promised to hunt them. Garrus, the Kimdisi is too involved. He must be told.
You know what will happen. On Tober, on Wolfheim, on Eschelin, all throughout the fringe. He and his kind will spread lies, and all Kavalars will be wraiths. It is the way of the manipulators, the mockmen.
Janasek's voice had none of the savage humor with which he had jabbed Dirk. He was cold serious now.
His life is at stake in this, and Gwen's, Vickery said. They must be told.
Everything?
The charade is over, Vickery said.
Ruach and Gwen spoke simultaneously. Jan, what? She started.
Charade? Life? Hunting? What is all this? Tell.
Jan Vickery turned and told them.